Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to those of you that don't speak Italian. I'm finally back in studio, reunited with Alex. We've done a lot of these on the phone. And what a week. We had Gab Marcotti on Monday, Yanis Mihailik on Wednesday. Really amazing interviews. If you've missed them, definitely check them out. Tonight, we wanted to do a show that was a little bit less broad, a little bit more specific. We have my friend Maurizio from Around J coming on to give us a perspective on Bonucci, everything going on at Juve, and especially everything that he's doing with his fan club here in the United States during the International Champions Cup. And we also have my colleague Zeke Tell coming on to tell us about this event Serie A hosted in New York City, about the TV rights deal and what the league is doing to increase their brand internationally. And I think you'll really enjoy those. But before we get to that, the transfer gods keep smiling upon us, Alex. You know, we had the Morata deal before our recent podcast. And yesterday, right after we finished recording, we had the shocking news of Marco Verratti getting rid of his longtime agent and switching him with the one and only Mino Raiola. So both Verratti and Mino, two people we've talked a lot about on the podcast. So I wanted to get your take on this change, Alex.
So yeah, at this point, I think if you follow European football, you know who Mino Raiola is. And, you know, Marco Verratti is now an upper echelon player. So at this point, after the whole debacle with his former agent and the whole prison quote and, you know, the continuous trend of PSG players at least being rumored to leave but not leaving, you don't just hire Mino Raiola if you're not trying to eventually leave. So, you know, we've said it before, at least I said, Verratti kind of threw PSG a bone for this season. But at least in my opinion, it's very clear by hiring Mino Raiola that he wants to get out. Whether it's Man U and everybody just wants to say, oh, Mino Raiola sends all his people to Man U, maybe. But clearly, Marco Verratti is a little unsettled at PSG, and he's looking for the super agent to do something about it. At least that's my take, David. How did you take it?
So my first take about this is be careful what you wish for. And I remember PSG fans for years have been saying Verratti needs to fire his agent because Verratti's agent's always talking about leaving. We don't like him. But, oh, guess what? He got rid of his agent, Di Campoli, and now he's with Mino Raiola. So be careful what you wish for with that. And, you know, a lot of Man United fans tweeted me, and I really love these guys. There's a lot of them that ask me a lot of questions. They support what we do. But I'm not going to take the approach that Raiola joining Verratti equals immediately Verratti going to Manchester United. And the reason I say that is Raiola has had a few players at PSG in recent years. Ibrahimovic, he offered him to a few clubs while Ibrahimovic was under contract with PSG. And guess what? He didn't. The only time he left was once the contract expired, and then he did head to Manchester United. There's Matuidi as well, the midfielder who last season was trying to leave, and despite having Mino Raiola, he wasn't able to leave as well. So I don't think this automatically means Verratti is going to leave this summer, but I agree with you that if you hire Raiola, you're getting a wartime agent. You're getting someone to really push your agenda. I'm also very interested to see if this is going to tie in somehow to the Neymar deal, because it's no secret that Verratti really wants to go to Barcelona. To me, it seems that's much more attractive to him than going to the Premier League. And I'm very interested to see if this Neymar deal to PSG happens. I'm still skeptical, but it seems to be gaining steam. If Raiola is going to somehow work it out, that Verratti goes to Barca in the deal. So certainly a very interesting development, and there'll be more to come, and I'm sure we'll be talking about this more on the podcast. So before we get to our guests, I want to get to answering the great questions that you guys send in. Keep doing it by using the CalcioLand hashtag. So Alex, we're reunited tonight in studio. I want to see which questions you have ready for tonight.
All right. Well, it wouldn't be a Twitter question segment if we didn't talk a little Keita Balde and Perisic for that matter. So nonetheless, David, would Kita Balde be a step up for Inter if they sign him to replace Ivan Perisic?
So interestingly, just yesterday we asked, someone asked, wouldn't Manchester United just be better off just cutting out the middleman and just signing Kita Balde, because Serie A clubs seem to be so good at selling their older stars for huge fees and then replacing them for someone that might be better long term. I think Perisic is a great player for Inter. He made a lot of sense, especially with their previous managers. I'm very interested to see how Perisic is going to fit in if he stays with Spalletti. Inter in general seems to want to add some muscle to their midfield, which they didn't have in the past. Perisic's work rate, and again, I say this all the time, just because I talk about his work rate doesn't mean that he doesn't have a great offensive game. But Kita Balde doesn't have a great work rate quite yet. I could see Kita Balde being amazing offensively if he comes to Inter with Spalletti. Look at what he did with Mohamed Salah. So long term, it might be a good move for Inter if that happens. And that's a big if, because a lot of the reports seem that Kita Balde is dead set on joining Juve when his contract expires. But hypothetically, I'd be very intrigued to see what Spalletti does with Kita Balde.
All right. Inter fans need something exciting like that. All right, next question. How do you see Patrick Schick fitting at Inter if he arrives?
So let me start by once again saying how disappointed I am in the Patrick Schick situation, his heart condition. And Di Marzio today reported that Schick's taking 2 weeks off to just rest and relax. I'm incredibly disappointed. And this isn't a Juve thing or an Inter fan. To me, anyone that's using Schick's situation to make jokes or talk about, Juve, giving up on him or his heart being Interista, I find that just so inappropriate, because this is a young man's life who has a condition, and he's a great talent. So now that I get off my soapbox with that, it would be very intriguing to see what happened if, say, Schick goes to Inter, because, of course, they have a great central striker in Icardi. I could see if he goes to Inter, Schick keeping the role as a super sub coming off the bench. Maybe that's one of the reasons why Sampdoria didn't play him more, was his health situation, and maybe grooming him as the eventual replacement for Icardi if he ever wanted to move on.
All right. David, will Lucas Bilia's arrival stunt Locatelli's growth at Milan?
So we talked about this a couple of episodes ago, Juve's interest in Locatelli, which I kind of saw as a way to soften the blow on Bonucci's departure. The way I see it, though, let's just look at it in the Milan vacuum. If Milan wants to get back to the Champions League, and boy, have they done enough to do that, I don't think Locatelli could be a starter. I think he's a great prospect, showed a lot. I just think in general with prospect, it's so easy to overrate them. They're a blank slate. We can project anything we want on them. So to me, if Milan's serious about getting back to the Champions League, to me, they're better off having a veteran like Bilia. Locatelli, I think, is only 18 or 19. And I think he can really learn from a midfielder who's 31, 32, has a ton of caps with Argentina. So I think it'd be good for his growth. And I think it's better for Milan to have someone like Bilia that can start.
Okay, should Bernardeschi get the number 10 jersey at Juventus, and where do you see him playing?
So the reason I picked this question is I found the quote from Bernardeschi's father about his son. He wouldn't be the first player to leave Fiorentina to join Juve. Look at Roberto Baggio. And a lot of people jumped on that as if he was comparing his son to Baggio. I didn't take it so much as that. I took it more as, look, Fiorentina hates Juve. They don't want to sell their players there. We saw that when Cuadrado was at Fiorentina. Yeah, he joined Juve, but that's when he was at Chelsea. We saw that with Jovetic. I think his father was really more saying, look, it has happened before. I think, though, giving him the number 10 jersey would just create even more of these parallels with Baggio, and I don't think that'd be a good idea. I think Bernardeschi's a good player. I'm maybe not as high on him as other people, but giving him the number 10 jersey would really create this parallel with Baggio too much, and I just don't think it's a good idea. As far as Bernardeschi, I think what's intriguing for Juve is he could literally play any of the positions behind Higuain offensively, so as a winger or as a trequartista. So to me, it makes a lot of sense why Juve is going after him to begin with.
All right, staying on Juventus. David, will Juventus make a Higuain-type signing for the midfield?
So when I think of a Higuain-type signing, I think of someone very expensive and a difference maker. Hopefully a difference maker, especially in the Champions League. I know this is kind of a joke. I think Higuain's been actually pretty good in the Champions League for Juve. But aside from that, is Juve going to get a difference maker in the midfield? Probably. It was very interesting that yesterday Di Marzio linked them to Milinkovic-Savic. I remember sitting in this chair when you and I did our first podcast, and he's one player that I talked about right away. I think he's incredible. To me, Milinkovic-Savic is exactly the type of player that would elevate Juve. I just don't think he'll be sold this summer. We mentioned Biglia. He already left Lazio. We mentioned Kita Balde, who's likely on his way out. So I don't see Lazio selling all three. They just gave Milinkovic-Savic an extension. I also think of the relationship between Juve and Lotito, who's Lazio's president. I don't even know if that'll ever happen, but good for Juve for pursuing him because he's perfect for them. I think, you know, they'll either end up with someone like Matic or Matuidi. I think Matic is probably closer to being a big difference maker. But Juve absolutely needs another midfielder. Last season, Adam Digby made this great point on our podcast that one of the reasons why Allegri made the switch in formation is he really only had two midfielders he could count on because of Marchisio's injury, and it's time to add another one to the mix.
Okay, staying kind of on Juventus. David, what do you make of Bonucci's transfer fee?
So we've talked a lot about this, but the reason why I wanted to bring it up again tonight is that I don't think it was a coincidence by any means that Milan waited to announce the Bonucci acquisition officially today. And they did it almost right after Juve did the De Sciglio one. And to me, Milan, and you got to give them credit, I think they're using social media very well this summer. I think the goal for them was to show we essentially got Bonucci for 30 million and De Sciglio. Juve announced De Sciglio for 12 million, and Juventus had said they had sold Bonucci for 42. So well played by Milan. I still go back to the fact that Bonucci is 30 years old. As good as he is, technically that transfer fee, because De Sciglio is a separate deal, at least on the financial books, Juve got matched the biggest return for a player over 30, which was Battistuta when he went from Fiorentina to Roma. But again, you know, the pitch will decide how bad this transfer fee was. If De Sciglio is able to reestablish his brand at Juve the way Allegri and Pirlo did in the past, this transfer fee won't look that bad. But again, Bonucci could really be a great catalyst for Milan's resurgence. So right now, I think Milan's looking good with the transfer fee. Juve's banking on De Sciglio having a resurgence. Remember, Allegri, when he arrived at Juve, everyone thought he was an idiot. People were throwing rocks at the car when Juve brought him in the Ritiro. So it's now pressures on De Sciglio to make this transfer fee look better.
Seriously. All right, let's move to a different team in Serie A. David, what type of players should Fiorentina be targeting?
So I go back to our first episode when I was sitting in this chair, and this is when Pioli at Inter was riding high. He had the team on a big winning streak, and then Inter, in usual Nerazzurri fashion, absolutely collapsed. Pioli was sacked. Now he finds himself at Fiorentina with a ton of players leaving. So this is, might sound like a joke, but Fiorentina needs to find players that are willing to at least show up at the summer retreat. I mean, Kalinic isn't like left twice already. Bernardeschi sent in a doctor's note why he's not there. Borja Valero left for Inter. Looks like Vicino's going to do the same thing, leave for Inter. So I think Fiorentina fans should be very concerned. It kind of sounds like a joke, but already having players willing to show up for the summer retreat would be a good start.
Well, I'm available if they want to call me up. I'm not very good. All right, David, last Twitter question. With Serie A and Ligue 1 clubs getting increasingly better, are we going back to a time in which all leagues are competitive?
So, you know, I like to always say on Twitter, you know, I only cover Serie A full-time, not the other. So I'm not a huge expert, but I do think there's a lot of momentum for this. I think Serie A is going to be more competitive. I'm not sure if Monaco is going to be able to keep up with Paris Saint-Germain, especially with the moves they're making and all the players they have lost. I do think in general, though, there might be a little bit of momentum for leagues in general being more balanced. I think, you know, the Bundesliga is still going to be a one-league team. Paris Saint-Germain probably is going to go back to dominating there. I think Serie A at least is going to be more competitive, and that's a good thing for the league, because I think for a lot of people that aren't really into Serie A, it's so easy to dismiss it and say Juve is going to win it anyway. Why should I bother watching? And to me, you are just... you're really cutting yourself short if you look at it that way, because Serie A has a lot to offer, even if you think that Juve is going to win. So again, thank you all for sending in the questions. We can't thank enough all of you that are subscribing and retweeting what we do. We really appreciate it. So now let's get to our great guests, Alex. Okay, so as you guys know by now, the interview part of the podcast is always my favorite. In a lot of circumstances, I get to learn a lot of things from great journalists. And in some instances, I get to catch up with good friends of mine to talk about calcio, like this evening. And tonight we are joined by my very good friend, Maurizio Giovanelli, who runs the AroundJ.com website. It's the biggest community of Juventus fans internationally. The reason I wanted him to come on tonight is a lot of reasons, everything going on with Bonucci. Maurizio does a lot of events concerning Juventus, and he's here in the United States. He's in New York right now because he's hosting a lot of very interesting events around the International Champions Cup, and we want to talk to him about this. So, Maurizio, for you, I can say benvenuto on the Calcio Land podcast. We're thrilled to have you on tonight.
Thank you, David. Thanks for inviting me to this podcast. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. So before we get into your amazing club, because to me, I'm so impressed with what you do with Around J, let's talk a little bit about what's happening on the pitch, what's happening with Juve on the Mercato, because our listeners are going to see you really have a unique perspective on this. So let's start with the biggest Juve news, of course, was the sale of Leonardo Bonucci, which was really shocking to everyone, the way it happened, and just the fact that he left to go to Milan, no less, not to go abroad. So Maurizio has a big presence in Juve's Curva at Juventus Stadium. He organizes a lot of events there, but he's a hardcore Juve fan that is in the Curva. So I wanted to ask you, what was your reaction to Bonucci leaving? Of course, we've seen players like Vidal and Pogba leave. To me, that was less shocking because Leo had such a strong connections to the fans. I know a few times he spent games in the Curva with you guys. So I wanted to ask you, what was your reaction to the news?
Yes, I think, David, you actually used the right word, shocking. That was really shocking news for us. Everything happened pretty fast, at least, you know, from what you can see outside. Maybe internally in the team they were already doing something in the previous week, but for us, for the fans, it was a very sad news in the round of 2 days. And as you said, for a guy that used to watch the games in Curva Sud when suspended, because every time Bonucci got red cards, the match after he was coming to Curva Sud to watch the game with us, with the fans. So to see this type of player leaving the club after winning 6 Scudetti in a row and become a legend of the team, it was absolutely shocking. And and I think there is a strong belief. I mean, of course, I'm in Turin. I think right now I'm in New York, as you said. I'm traveling following the team for the tournament. But in Turin, I have a lot of contacts there, and still today they tell me that there are a lot of rumors and looks like I would say the relationship between Bonucci and the team, as well as with the management of Juventus, got really worse and worse from February onward. You probably remember what happened in February just before the match against Porto in Champions League. Bonucci and Allegri got something to say on the pitch, you know, when the match was shown and live all over the world. They got something to say together, so in the end Allegri decided to punish Bonucci for what happened, and Bonucci was put outside of the team that played against Porto in Portugal. That was the first part of the story, and after that, apparently, as I say, the story got worse and worse. We heard a lot of rumors about what happened in Cardiff in the halftime.
Yeah.
I think nobody will never say, and we never know exactly the truth. Maybe in a few years from now, but
yeah.
At the moment, what we can see, I mean, what we know is that for sure something happened. And Bonucci was one of the protagonists, I would say, one of the negative protagonists of that halftime in Cardiff. So yes, it was absolutely shocking, and what actually we still it's still tough to digest is that the team he chose was is Milan actually. So this is one thing, and the other thing is the tag price, because in the end it looks like we got 42 million. Which sound even worse if you say 30 million plus the Sciglio, you know.
That's so, for sure.
Yeah, so it's a little bit a couple of things that we will need some time to digest. But apparently, it's not the same for Bonucci, because already in this day he's posting a lot of things for Milan. Of course, he's his new team, so he has to do that. It's part of the game. But for the fans, it will be a little bit more time to digest, and I'm pretty sure that. When we will be back to the stadium, there will be a mix of feelings in the fans of the stadium.
Excellent. I really appreciate the perspective because, you know, we've talked about this with journalists, and I've covered this a lot from the Mercato perspective, and it's very interesting to hear it from someone that was in the curva with Bonucci. So you mentioned what happened in Cardiff, and, of course, you were at the game, as you often travel for Juve's big matches there. And, you know, obviously Real Madrid going in was the slight favorite, but there was a lot of hope that this would finally be the time that Juve would win the Champions League with Buffon. Since you were there, do you think you witnessed the best chance that Juve had with Buffon to win it, and unfortunately now it's going to be harder, or do you have hope that they can get back there?
It was definitely the right occasion for us to win the Champions League. I mean, it was almost written in the stars that it was going to happen in June for many different reasons. You mentioned Buffon, and I think in the end, of course, Buffon deserves the Champions League like every other player, actually, and like every other fan. But I think there was too much do it for Gigi before the game, you know?
Yeah.
It was like he was playing his own game against Real Madrid. And I think it was not really the case. But I think all in all, yes. I'm afraid that this year is going to be more difficult for Juventus to reach the final. I would say even from statistical point of view, for a team to reach the final 2 years in a row is very, very complicated.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's going to be very difficult, and probably it was his best chance to win. Maybe even the final against Milan that he played and we lost the penalties,
yeah.
That was even even better if we speak about probability. But after so many years, yes, this was a very good chance.
Yeah, I really agree with you on that. So let's talk about some Juve players before we get into the great things that you do with Around Jay. So one player that I think last season did really well and that personally I'm not sure is going to be able to keep up these performances is Sami Khedira, who I think when he's healthy, he's one of the best midfielders in the world. But, you know, last season for his standards, he was very healthy. Do you expect that to continue? And by the same token, we saw Claudio Marchisio. He battled injuries all of last season. Maybe the hope is if Khedira can't keep this up, that Marchisio can fill in for him. So where do you see the situation for those two players?
I think the situation for these two players will depend a lot on the transfer market that is still not closed yet. As you know, Juventus is definitely targeting a strong midfielder. And this will have an impact, of course, in the decision of the coach Allegri. You know, as you know, in the last in the second half of last year, Allegri switched to the module 4-2-3-1, where Khedira and Pjanic basically were the two starters. In the end of the season, Marchisio got more playing time because he recovered from these big injuries you had he had the year before. So it's right. Both Khedira and Pjanic played a lot of games last year, especially Khedira, which was a bit surprised compared to the year before. I must say that Marchisio in the last part of the year showed that he was coming back. Marchisio is one of those players that needs really time to be back in shape. And I think that at the moment, both Khedira and Marchisio probably are in the same level in Allegri's head. But again, it will all depend if this big midfielder will arrive. Also, I think it's also important to remind that a big step for Juve would really be to get rid of some players in the midfield, because we're talking about that. Yeah. I'm talking about players like Sturaro, Lemina, Rincon, which, they are all very good players, don't get me wrong. But we can't think, of course, also to have five top players sitting on the bench. But they are good, but they are not actually Juve players. So, and last year, especially in the last part of the season, we saw how important it was to have a rotation in the team, because Khedira and Pjanic played most of the games, and they arrived at the end of the season with basically no fuel. So I hope this new season Allegri will have more players to be played in some crucial roles, like the one that Khedira is playing in the midfield.
So the next player I want to ask you about, the last time I saw you, I came to Turin and we spent some time together. It was when Juve played Atalanta at home. And this was a period when Higuain was really struggling. You were optimistic of him. You know, before the game, you told me, watch, Higuain's going to score two goals. He didn't, but shortly after, he went on a great streak. So what do you think about Higuain moving forward at Juve? I think, to me, you know, he's always going to be connected to Pogba, fair or unfair. You know, the big transfer fee came in for Pogba. You know, whichever way you look at it, Higuain was where that fee was mainly invested in. So where do you see him going? I think, you know, he gets a lot of negative press because of Cardiff, but I think overall in the Champions League, you know, what he did with Monaco, he scored the two goals to get him to the final. He had the assist with Mandzukic in the final. It might be a little bit unfair to put all the blame on him. So I wanted to get your take on Higuain last season at Juve and moving forward.
Well, in the end, honestly, I think that Higuain was probably the MVP of the season. Actually, even Juventus awarded Higuain as MVP of the season. So he proved to be the right. He proved that Juventus made the right decision in doing this big investment on him. And Juventus made this investment because last season we didn't really need to change completely the team, like, for example, Milan is doing this summer. Yep. We needed to have one, two champions that were able to make the difference in Champions League, mainly because, of course, that was our main target of the season. And again, I think it proved to be, it proved that. Of course, one can say that he didn't score in the final, but if we talk about a fan that knows about football, we all know that especially in a final, there is a big component which is also luck. On top of your personal skills, and as you can see, even happening in Cardiff, there were even other components like what happened in the halftime. So I don't like those that are blaming Higuain for the final. I think he still has a couple of years to be played at very top level, and considering the mercato that Juventus is doing, where we will have Douglas Costa, Dybala, and hopefully Bernardeschi just behind him, I think we will have even more opportunities to score in this new in the coming season.
I couldn't agree more with what you said. So you mentioned Dybala, and you know, it sounds like he was one of the reasons why there was this big fight in the locker room. Now, I think Dybala might be the most talented player in Serie A as a whole. I think he's shown a lot at Juve. Do you think he can go to the next level next season?
I would say it's about time. He's no more 18 or 20. He's now, I think, 23. Today he's one of the best players in the world. But as you say, he needs to do more, and especially if he really wants to be the best in the world. Many compare him to Ronaldo and Messi, but to be honest, I think we are far away from those players. Dybala needs to be more consistent. He's definitely on the right way. But now it's really the time to do this big step. And similar to what we said before with Higuain, the new players that arrived, Costa and hopefully Bernardeschi, I think should help him a lot because they add a lot of technique to the team. So I think it's going in that direction. So let's hope that Dybala will really explode this year. And then next summer will be a nightmare to keep Dybala at Juventus. But let's take one step at a time.
Absolutely, can't agree more. So, you know, I've been thinking a lot in the past few days. What would have been a bigger loss for Juve if the choice is, you know, keeping Bonucci or Alexandro? What would have been a bigger loss? And you know, when I look at the other center backs that Juve has, they have a lot of good ones, and how hard it is to find good left backs. And to me, one of the best things that Allegri did at Juve was develop Alexandro. He's become an incredibly complete left back. So I wanted to get your perspective. If I told you at the beginning of the summer, Juve can only keep one between Alexandro and Bonucci, and I know, of course, you know, Bonucci came in the curva. He was at Juve much longer. What do you think would have been a bigger loss for Juve?
Well, there are a few parameters to consider. One is the age. Bonucci is true that he's 30, and in his role, he can potentially play 5-6 years more at a very high level. But Alexander is definitely younger. As you said, it's very difficult to find a top player in that position. Allegri developed him, yes, true. But if you notice, he didn't play many games last year. I mean, he's, of course, more than the year before. But starting from this season, we really expect that he's playing basically all the games in the starting lineup for Juventus. And he has the capability and the skills to really make the difference. He proved in a couple of occasions already last season. I would say now it's easy to say that I wanted to keep more Alexandro than Bonucci because Bonucci is already gone.
Yeah.
They were both going to be very hard to digest. One is gone. At least let's keep this one.
Absolutely. So the last Juve player I want to ask you about is probably my favorite player on the team. And this actually takes me back to when I got to know you. Is around the time Juve played at Manchester City, they went to England. I know you were at the game. Mandzukic scored a great goal, and I remember his celebration with the Juve fans there. And that's right around the time we got to know each other. And I've been always a big fan of Mandzukic. And to me, he really represents the grinta, which is such a trademark of so many great Juve players. So I wanted to get your perspective on Mandzukic and how you rate him.
I can tell you the point of view of Kurva, if you like. And actually, Mandzukic in the original position, so like Higuain, pure attacker, he was not very well considered by Juventus fans, simply because he's not the type of player that scores tons of goals.
Yeah.
So I think that is pretty clear. What's which the mindset of the fans in Curva at the stadium was when Allegri put him in the position in the left wing,
yep,
where he played the last part of the season. In that position, Mandzukic really showed the passion, the energy that he put into every game. I would say very quickly became one of the idol of the fans. Because, as you say, he's a very I think he's a warrior in the end.
Mm-hmm.
He really fights on each ball, and fino alla fine, which is also our motto, he gives everything for the jersey and in order to win the match. So I think in the he was able with the time to gain a lot of points in Curva Sud, and now became one of the players that we will always like and support. Also because, as you said, every time he scores, he likes to come just in front of Curva Sud and celebrate with the fans. So it's something that we really appreciate at the stadium when a player comes to enjoy the goal with us.
Yeah, and when I went to that game, Juve-Atalanta, last season, that's right when he had switched positions, and I was there with my wife, Fiamma, and I remember, I mean, him being all over the pitch, and I remember just looking at her and saying to her in Italian, cazzo, questo è dappertutto sul campo. Like, this guy was, like, everywhere. Really.
Since then, if you remember on the social, we started to see the heat map of Mandzukic everywhere.
Absolutely. Okay, so before we get to the great things we do at Around Jay, I'm sitting here in studio, a producer Alex wearing his Chelsea jersey, and Alvaro Morata's on his way. There's a lot. I've trained Alex, and he knows full well how great Morata is, but there's a lot of Chelsea fans that are concerned. So I wanted the perspective from someone that actually watched Morata play closely for 2 years. So what would you tell Chelsea fans? What are they getting with Alvaro Morata?
Well, first of all, I invite you because you have two of the guys that I love, Conte and Morata now. So you must be very, very happy for that. You already started to fall in love with Conte, and I have no doubt that it will be the same for Morata. Morata not only is a very nice person, he's a gentleman, he's a very special guy, but on the pitch, of course, he's also one of those making the difference, especially in the big games. When it's an important game, Morata is the one that always show up. That is a very important factor for a player that in the end has been paid a lot of money. I was talking yesterday with some friends. They are Manchester United fans, so from Premier League, and I was trying to compare Morata with Lukaku, and for example, they were saying that Lukaku to them was better because he's already, you know, established in the Premier League, he knows how to play and so on, while Morata doesn't have this. But to be honest, Morata used to play for a huge team, fight for a jersey to start in the lineup, both at Juventus and Real Madrid. He scored everywhere he went. So I have no doubt that Morata will be a key player for Chelsea in the next season. Actually, the one thing I want to avoid is to meet Chelsea in the group stage in the Champions League because it will be really tough for us to play against Conte and Morata at the stadium. Morata, I can tell you, is really the guy that we all love in Torino, and we really wanted him to stay at Juventus.
Yeah.
Even in this transfer session, I can tell you that there were still few that were hoping him to come back.
So there you have it, guys. This is someone that actually has watched Morata in person quite a bit, and I can't agree more with this assessment. So, Maurizio, your analysis on the players was fantastic. Alex and I were nodding at each other the whole time, how great your perspective was. So let's get into what you do with Around Jay. So you contacted me a while back. You told me, hey, check out what we do. And I always complain that Serie A doesn't have an international perspective. I think in general, there's a very provinciale attitude in Italy, not looking internationally. And you have absolutely taken a completely different approach. You do an incredible job for fans all over the world to come see Juve. So tell our listeners a little bit what your goal was when you started Around Jay.
Yes, my goal, which is actually still my focus today, was basically to connect Juventus fans from all over the world, provide them news 24/7 from a fan perspective, something that normally you don't easily find in the market. But mainly, I would say to support the international fans where they come to Turin to watch a Juve game. Not only to help them with hotels and logistic aspects of their trips, but mainly to organize special parties and events before and after the games. And people love them because they feel local and they do things that otherwise they would never do. And they get to know many other new Juventus friends from all over the world. So I think this is very nice. As you know, as you mentioned before, also Ranjay now is the biggest international community of Juventus fans. Everything started back in 2014, and now we count almost 1 million of followers on the main social platform. So it's really growing fast. And I would say for many supporters, watching their team playing at Juventus Stadium is the ambition of a lifetime. And we work really hard to enrich that experience and make their visit to Turin truly unforgettable. I think you have been with us a couple of times, and you can probably also prove that it's on match days when Round J truly comes into its own, ensuring each visitor to get to live the Juventus experience, just as those native fans on the Curva Sud do each and every Sunday. Normally we meet outside the stadium before the match for a beer, you know, to talk a little bit, and then after the match eventually we go for a nice dinner in downtown Turin. This is standard, I would say. This is something that we do for every game, while for the big games, I don't know, Inter, Milan, Napoli, Roma, and all the Champions League match, we actually deliver an even better experience because we organize a day trip with fans. Maybe to the beach or to the mountain.
Yeah.
All of this is actually one hour and a half maximum driving within Turin. So I think it's really nice, and it's a really nice experience. So in the end, Juventus fans that are visiting really have a lot of fun. They have the chance to meet other fans from different nationalities and share passion and love for Juve. This is something that it's absolutely priceless for them. And I think the winning factor is that we are not really a tour operator. In the end, the feeling for them is more like they are going out with friends. And this is why Round J events are becoming more and more popular.
Yeah, I've been in Turin twice since I've known you. I've gone to see what you do. It's truly remarkable. To all you Milanisti, Interisti, Roma fans out there in Italy, if any of you are listening, like, you guys have to come up with something similar, because what Maurizio's doing there is truly incredible. So right now you're in New York City. I know yesterday you did a big event and you're organizing some tailgate parties before the International Champions Cup matches with Juve here in the U.S. So tell our listeners what they can expect if they join you at some of these events.
Yes. Actually, already yesterday evening we had one event. We met with Mauro and Marco Lavilla, who are the producer and the directors of the Juventus Story, a movie that was released in Italy a few months ago, and now it's going to be released all over the world. It was fun. It was very nice to listen to these guys who really spent years working on this movie. And now, tomorrow evening, there will be the training at the Red Bull Arena in Newark. There will be, of course, first Barcelona and then Juventus will train. It's an open session training, so many Juventus fans will already go to this session. We will have fun there. But the main event is going to be on Saturday, as you know, at 6 p.m. Local time here in New York. There will be Juventus Barcelona, so we organize a very nice tailgate starting at 1:30 p.m. We will meet in the parking lot K of the MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, and we have organized, of course, food, drinks, music, some games with the fans. We will have some special guests, so it's going to be very fun. And again, the target here is to let the different fans traveling from U.S., from the different states, but also from Canada, Mexico, and even from Europe, to meet together, know each other, create a network, and spend some time together, something that otherwise would be very difficult for them.
Yeah, I think it's terrific what you're doing, because what you do in Around Jay and in Torino, like you said, is really to give someone that's traveling from all over the world the experience of being a Juve fan that follows all the games. And to me, it sounds like you're looking to bring that experience during this tour, and I think that's fantastic. So, Maurizio, I can't thank you enough. You were incredible. Your analysis on the players was really unique, because you brought the perspective of a fan that watches the games at the stadium, and what you're doing with Around Jay to me is fantastic, not just for Juve, but for calcio as a whole. So as someone like you who tries to promote calcio internationally, I'm thrilled that you joined us. So thank you so much, amico.
Thank you, David. No, I appreciate I had a chance to talk us about Around Jay in this podcast, which from what I understand is growing very, very much. So congratulations also to you.
Thank you. And we'll talk again during the season, because I want to talk more about what you're doing in Turin. So get some rest. Sure. I know you have a lot coming up. So grazie again, amico.
Prego. Ciao, David. Ciao. Bye-bye.
Okay. I am very excited to have, for the first time, a member of my staff on the Marzio's English page join me on the podcast. It's only fair that it would be Zeke Tell, who's the longest tenure member of my team, has been working with us for almost 2 years. I can't believe time flies. And the reason I wanted to have Zeke on today is yesterday he attended a Serie A roadshow in New York City, which, considering the history of the league, is really quite the event. Serie A is finally trying to look internationally. And this was an event that was attended by the Lega Serie A director, Marco Brunelli. There was also James Pallotta, who is, of course, Roma's owner. So Zeke attended the event. He wrote a fantastic article about what he witnessed on Di Marzio's site. So I wanted to get his take about this. So Zeke, welcome to Calcioland. We are thrilled to have you.
Thanks, David. Same here.
Awesome. So let's start. You attended this yesterday in New York City. After you attended, if you had to give a brief description of what the goal of this forum was for Serie A, how would you describe it?
Yeah, their goal is really to show how they're open and they're innovating, and they want to be partners with broadcasters. That was my main takeaway. You know, they have a new TV rights deal that's debuting for the 2018-2019 season. And so they'll be bidding on that starting at the end of this month in July.
So, Zeke, one of the things that stood out to me in the article that I was really surprised was actually the amount of people worldwide that watch Serie A, despite the struggles and the fact that the league doesn't really help itself to make this a marketable product. But what was the figure as far as people that watched Serie A last season that was mentioned yesterday?
Yeah, David, it turns out over a billion people watch Serie A. There's They announced the number at 1.1 billion, and that's a combined viewership total throughout the season of broadcasting.
That's really incredible. So I think, you know, this number can only go up because, again, I think the product is really great. And I think this roadshow shows that Serie A is committed to making this a more attractive product. So what were the things that they mentioned to make this better? Are there some things technology-wise, scheduling-wise? What were some things that stood out to you as far as what they're doing to even increase this number?
Yeah, I think both of those things, they're obviously, talked about how they're improving the HD quality of the streams of the broadcast, which is obviously something that fans demand in this century. But the real thing that the event was trying to promote was the availability of multi-platform coverage. They were going to make the rights available on a platform-neutral basis, they called it, where the distributors could do what they pleased with it in terms of sending it out to their subscribers, and really using those platforms to provide not just the matches, but really off-the-field access and something that Pallotta called, 24, not just 90 minutes, but 24-7, see what happens the rest of the 24 hours in the day.
I'm very excited that Palotta's heavily involved with this because, of course, you know, he's here in Boston, did a great job with the Celtics. I think he really has been doing a lot with Roma. Even their social media team's doing a great job. We have our former colleague, Gianmarco Pascarella, who's doing really good work there as well. So did they also mention some potential changes to the way the games are scheduled? It was interesting that we had a Dre Cordero on our podcast a few weeks ago, and he calls the games for BN Sport, and he mentioned that one of the problems is that a lot of times the top teams are playing at the same time. Did they talk about potentially changing that?
Yeah, they addressed that, and moving the number of slots from 5, where it's at currently, to 8 in the new package is, I think, going to give the fans an opportunity to watch more of those big teams play week in and week out.
I think that's a really a great idea and really necessary. And I think, too, one thing that Serie A is doing that's really smart is they've changed also when the games take place. They're going to be playing more around the Christmas holiday, where the Premier League kind of has a monopoly, and they're looking to change that. So the last question I have before I ask for your final thoughts on the event, are there also some potential changes to the way the TV rights are distributed compared to what they're doing now?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a departure from the traditional country or continent approach. They introduced something called a regional approach, where they'll group similar communities of potential fans by language spoken, or so not, you know, strictly geographical. So there might be a Latin American, Spanish-speaking distribution offered, and as well as one for the entire Western Europe. But countries will still be able to bid for just their own territory, but it's really rethinking the way that distribution is handed out.
Are there any other things that stood out to you at the event that we didn't cover that you think it's important for our listeners to know about?
Yeah, it was great to see the participation from the clubs and really the effort to make this something that the clubs were going to be behind. So not only Palotta, but also Bologna's CEO, Finucci, was there. So a representative from Inter came. So really the clubs are trying to increase the quality and the type of content that the league's going to be making available for its broadcast partners.
Excellent. So Zeke, I really appreciate your insight on this event, because I think it's really important that Serie A is taking this more international approach, and it's great to have gotten your perspective on it. And I encourage everyone to read the article you wrote on this, and I encourage you to keep writing, because I was very impressed, and I want to thank you for all your great work on the Marzio site and for joining us this evening.
Thank you, David. Have a great evening.
All right. Take care, Zeke. Okay, so we haven't done pop culture in a while, and I'm looking forward in the future to having our good friend Andrew Barker back on to do a little bit more on music and films. But today there was another tragic news in the world of music that I wanted to address. So Linkin Park's lead singer Chester Bennington unfortunately took his own life today as well. So I have a couple of thoughts on this. You know, they say that unfortunately deaths come in threes, and in a way this is falls under that category. And the reason I say that is Chester had replaced Scott Weiland on Stone Temple Pilots. Scott Weiland passed away about a year and a half ago, and unfortunately Chester decided to take his life on Chris Cornell's birthday, an artist that we've covered a lot today. So to me, that's very sad, the coincidence of this. And, you know, when I heard this news, it kind of made me think once again that we should never judge people from the outside. To me, it doesn't matter how successful, how rich, how good looking you are, all that. Like, someone's individual pain is the biggest pain in the world, no matter how you come off on the outside. And the other thing that I thought of when I heard of this death is, like, regrets in life are probably the worst thing. You know, I go back to when Chris Cornell got Temple of the Dog back together last year. They just did a couple of shows. I was tempted to go see them in New York. The tickets were really expensive, but I was like, you know, I should go. And then I told myself, well, you know, they'll tour again. I'll just wait when they come closer to Boston or when tickets go down. And to this day, I really regret not doing that. And I think, too, about this podcast. Like, I regret not starting it sooner. Alex and I have been doing a lot of great work here. It's incredibly gratifying to me, and I just wish I had started sooner. So I want to end the podcast by thanking you guys for your support, and also just to remind you that you just never know what's going to happen in life. So try not to have regrets. Try to live life to the fullest, the best that you can. Don't judge people from the outside. If you are in pain, you know, it's okay to admit it. So I'm going to close for Chester on Linkin Park. And I'm going to close with what Chris Cornell's most famous song on Temple of the Dog is, which is Say Hello to Heaven. And I hope you're in a better place and you feel better. And thank you all for listening.